Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
This conversation we had was about that, and what I did was to position the fact that President Boyka, and with the arrest agenda, is not only looking at us getting aid, but how we partner with friendly governments to ensure that investment opportunities are highlighted.
Liberia's foreign minister talks with top officials in Qatar, seeking to deepen bilateral relations with the Middle Eastern country.
The proposal that we have would take care of Ethiopia's key interest, competitive access, and would help resolve the tension and the controversy that the MOU has sparked. This is our hope.
Djibouti offers a pathway towards resolving the tensions between Somalia and Ethiopia.
We will continue with our protest as planned, and we will follow all the procedures needed by the law before the protest. Even if we will not protest, we are still in a danger, a serious threat to our lives.
And Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, vows to defy a police ban on their protest. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Liberian Foreign Minister Sarah Baisolo Nyanti says talks with top officials in Qatar seeks to deepen bilateral relations with the Middle Eastern country. She adds that the talks focused on investment opportunities in Liberia for Qatari investors. Her remarks follow Nyanti's meeting with Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman, Qatar's Prime Minister and Minister for Foreign Affairs. They also discussed deepening cooperation between the two countries. Foreign Minister Sarah Baisolo Nyanti tells me that her trips form part of the government's effort to signal to the international community that Liberia is ready for business and has created an enabling environment for investors.
So in Qatar, what I did was to have very excellent strategic conversations with the Prime Minister, as well as the Minister of Transport, Minister of Social Affairs and Gender, as well as the Qatar Foundation and the Qatar Fund for Development. I was the guest of Sheikha Mozart bint Nasser, the mother of the Emir, the Queen Mother, for her celebration or her recognition of the day for attacks on schools, education under attack. And the theme was education in peril, the human cost of war.
I understand your government has issued an initiative to strengthen bilateral relations as part of the effort to attract investment opportunities in Liberia and private sector growth. Talk to me briefly about it.
Qatar is one of those countries where we have a friendly relationship. We've been voting partners with Qatar. We support them. They support us. However, we've never had a deep bilateral engagement that, you know, saw us have government-to-government resource for development. And so this conversation we had was about that. And what I did was to position the fact that President Boyka and with the arrest agenda is not only looking at us getting aid, but how we partner with friendly governments to ensure that investment opportunities are highlighted. And so my discussions in Qatar were about the fact that we do need some aid for the arrest agenda. However, we also highlighted the opportunities that exist in the mining sector, in the tourism sector, in different areas where the private sector can come in, because job creation is not for government to hire people. Job creation is for government to create the policy framework to ensure that foreign direct investment will thrive.
What was the response when you held talks with these leaders in Qatar about the need to come and invest in Liberia?
The response was positive. In fact, in these meetings that I had, we had deep discussions about the seaports and the airport, as well as the investments that are possible in agriculture, looking at the need for climate smart agriculture, looking at the need for tourism. I shared various perspectives with them, and they were very interested. In fact, we're now having a conversation about the Qatar Africa Business Summit and how like participate, which were not on the list before.
Is there a need for public-private partnerships that will benefit Liberia and, by extension, West Africans?
Most definitely. And in fact, the National Investment Commission is structured in a way where they can lead on these conversations. So for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, with economic diplomacy at the heart of the work we're doing, we have these conversations with countries, with governments, with companies. And the National Investment Commission is there to now have those structured conversations around the areas of interest for investment and how those public-private partnerships can be structured and how it can work. So the key here is to signal to the world that Liberia is open for business and we're ready to have those conversations. And most importantly, that with the rule of law at the forefront, with the president being very clear about ending impunity and ensuring that there's accountability and transparency, investors can be assured that their funds will be protected.
Talk to me about what your government is doing about youth employment.
President Boyka has been very clear about his vision, the arrest agenda, which focuses on agriculture, rule of law, roads and infrastructure, education, sanitation, and tourism. And underpinning all of this is digitalization, is technology. And the president has launched an initiative for youth, for 10,000 youth to be exposed to skill sets to actually drive innovation. In addition to that, you will note that last month I was at the UN and there was a peace-building meeting on Liberia where we put on the table the need for us to strengthen our efforts on youth peace and security. Within the context of youth peace and security is making sure that youth are the primary target for skills development, you know, for ensuring their inclusion in governance and in national processes and so forth, and youth being agents of change to mitigate risks of youth being, you know, taking down the negative pathway, including the issues of drugs and drug abuse and so forth. And so youth at risk in Liberia, the numbers are high, and the president has it as a focus to ensure that we work on rehabilitation and make sure that youth have a pathway for education, whether it's formal or informal education. We're also strengthening the efforts on technical vocational and educational training. Skill sets that are needed to drive the private sector are the focus in institutions like the Booker Washington Institute, and others are being strengthened along those lines.
Sarah Baysolo Nyanti is Liberia's foreign minister. She spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Djibouti's top envoy to the U.S. says his country has offered a pathway towards resolving the tensions between Somalia and Ethiopia. This after Ambassador Mohamed Siad Douali said the administration in Djibouti offered to grant Ethiopia access to the Red Sea. It comes after Addis Ababa signed the agreement with Somalia's breakaway region, Somaliland. The move angered Mogadishu, which accused Ethiopia of violating its sovereignty and led to tensions between the two countries. Ambassador Mohamed Siad Douali tells me that the administration in Djibouti is hopeful the offer will help ease the tensions between Mogadishu and Addis Ababa. Here's part one of the conversation.
It's offering a pathway to resolve the tensions between Ethiopia and Somalia. Ethiopia wants access to the sea, and Somalia is saying, if you want to have access, the Somali government is the only one that has the legal authority to permit that. Somaliland is not a transit state, nor any kind of state. So the proposal that we have would take care of Ethiopia's key interest, competitive access, and would help resolve the tension that and the controversy that the MOU has sparked. But this is our hope. We have an excellent trading partnership with Ethiopia. We have a port utilization agreement that was signed in 2002. The terms of and modalities are very, very clear. We look at how to solve problems. It's solutions oriented and it's competitive. So the offer that we have will build on that excellent trading partnership that we have and will helpfully resolve the tensions, because we need to promote helpful regional conduct.
But do you think the proposal is enough by itself to achieve the objective of reducing tensions between Mogadishu and Addis Ababa?
The terms and modalities, of course, will have to be discussed, negotiated. But we believe it would take care of Ethiopia's key interest, like I said.
Well, I spoke with a political analyst from Somalia, and he is of the view that the proposal by Djibouti will actually put Addis Ababa on the hot spot and might not even take the proposal because it puts the spotlight on them. He thought that perhaps a dialogue with the two countries sitting around the table with a proposal like this could be better. That's his view. But what is your take?
No, he's entitled to his opinion. We want to continue to believe that the offer that we made will help.
So, Mr. Ambassador, Ethiopia has been described as a landlocked country. Talk to me about the proposal in terms of Ethiopia being a landlocked country and how it can have access to the ocean or the sea in this proposal by Djibouti.
Now, to borrow the phrase from one of the experts that worked on the Africa Maritime Strategy, I'd rather use the term landly connected. It is not because there's lack of territorial access to the sea that you do not have access to the sea. And Djibouti offers access to the sea and will continue to offer competitive access to the sea to a major trading partner like Ethiopia.
So let's look at Djibouti's role in promoting regional peace and security in the Horn of Africa region and by extension the African region as a whole or the continent as a whole.
The headquarters of the regional organization, IGAD, is in Djibouti. Looking at the security map in the region, we find out that there were crises that needed to be dealt with. So we devoted a lot of attention to helping resolve those crises. You would recall Somalia was one of the countries that needed help. And you also had Sudan. So IGAD was involved in the negotiation of the CPA that eventually led to the creation of South Sudan. It's in Djibouti's DNA to promote peace and stability in the region. And back in 1991, then President Guled also convened a conference when fighting erupted in Somalia and the government was overthrown. This was an attempt to try and, you know, achieve a peace before it escalates any further. So we convened two conferences in Djibouti. It's called Djibouti 1 and Djibouti 2. So to sum it up, we have no choice but to continuously promote peace and helpful regional conduct in the region.
Mohamed Siad Dwali is Djibouti's ambassador to the U.S. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Join us on Sunday for the conclusion of the conversation.
A leading member of Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema, says the party is determined to carry out its planned September 23 protest against killings and abductions of supporters. John Mrema, Chadema's director of protocol, communications and foreign affairs, says it is illegal for any state institution to prevent the demonstrations. His remarks come after police said on Friday that they were banning the main opposition party from holding a protest in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam on September 23rd, unless recent disappearances were investigated and missing members brought back alive or dead. But police spokesperson David Bisimi told reporters that the Chadema protests are banned and warned the party that police will deal with anyone who violates this order. However, John Mrema tells me that the police lack constitutional mandate to stop the coming mass demonstration.
We've heard the statement from the Tanzanian police, and our protests, we announced that we will conduct a protest on 23rd of this month, and only one condition, that if our leaders who have been abducted, five of them, since others from July and others from August, are not released, we will conduct a mass protest in Dar es Salaam to ask about where about them. So the statement by the police, it is not legal, because the law recognizes protests, the police act, the political parties act, and even the constitution of the country give us the right to protest. And we will follow all the procedures needed by informing the police, as the law says that we have to inform them 48 hours before the protest. We'll write to them and we'll show them the route where our protest will start and where we'll end up. So the statement by police today, they have just, it's just a say, but we don't think it, they have that right to ban our protest, but rather they are supposed to support us while demonstrating.
So, Mr. Mrema, you are saying that the planned protest of September 23rd will proceed in spite of the police statement that that planned protest is banned and will not hold?
Yes, that's what I mean, that we will continue with our protest as planned, and we will follow all the procedures needed by the law before the protest.
But the police warned that they would deal with anybody who violate the order banning your protest. Will you not be putting your supporters in danger with possible clash with police officers on that day?
We are already in danger, so we don't see a big danger rather than us being abducted in a daylight, killed. So what fear else do we supposed to fear? If they can abduct us from a bus and kill one of us, and others have been abducted, we don't know where are they, we should not wait until all of us we are finished. That's why we are ready for that, because even if we will not protest, we are still in a danger, a serious threat to our lives.
The question
and
some,
our members as well.
Yeah, the question some Tanzanians are asking is there another way that Chadema can engage the police without going through the route of protests or demonstrations to find out what happened to those who you claim were abducted or arrested or detained by the Tanzanian police?
We have given them a chance to tell us where are they. They have kept quiet. The Speaker of the House banned the parliament to discuss about the abduction in the country. The court, we have one case of the three who have been detained, the Justice Soka and the two others. We filed the habeas corpus case, but the court said, no, you don't have an evidence. So even in the courts, the doors are closed. In the parliament, the doors are closed. So the only way is for us to get out and tell the public, if we keep quiet, we are finished. If we protest, we are finished. So we have no other alternative rather than going public. This is the only language now they can understand.
And are your leaders and supporters ready to be arrested? Because the police vowed to deal with anyone who violates this order banning the protest.
I think we are more than ready, because we are determined. Because if we keep quiet, our lives are in danger. So we better all of us be arrested and stay in a police custody. Maybe we'll be safe for some.
John Mrema is Chadema's Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs. He spoke with me from the Tanzania commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. A spokesperson of the Ugandan Main Opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, insists the party's presidential candidate, Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, won the presidential election in 2021. Alex Waiswa also says allegations that the party used election commission officials to rig the elections are without merit. His remarks come after President Yoweri Museveni said he has evidence that the NUP used election agents to rig the elections in 2021 with 1 million votes. To ensure future election integrity, the president called for an electronic system to prevent voter irregularities and rigging. But NUP Deputy National Spokesperson Alex Weiswa tells me that in spite of the election-related violence, Bobi Wine defeated the president in the presidential contest.
General Museveni, if there's anything that he will ever get over, because massively the country woke up to the truth and voted for Bobi Wine. Bobi Wine that won that election with 59.4%. And to the realization of the state today, they now know how much and what they did to that election, which was a military operation. You know that it was covered by bloodbath on 19th November. It was a sham election. And today he is giving a testament that actually he's occupying office out of a fraudulent process, defeating the democracy that is enshrined in our constitution. So for him today to come out and say that he has evidence that the NUP cheated him with over 1 million votes. Museveni didn't get any vote in Uganda. As I speak now, he does not have the true reflection of the past election, because in that past election, the person who won that election was His Excellency Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu Bobi Wine. And in fact, today's Museveni's statement is only an admission that Bobi Wine beat him with over 1 million votes.
The president explained that the vote rigging was facilitated by electoral agents at the polling stations who failed to properly oversee the election process, who aided the NUP to rig the election by 1 million votes.
The people who are in charge of the election are solely appointed by him. And in fact, prior to that election, it is General Museveni who sacked the secretary of the Electoral Commission, who sacked the communications director of the Electoral Commission. By the time we went to that election, that Electoral Commission was not fully comprised, because the true results with the Electoral Commission reflected that Kyagulanyi Robert Ssentamu Bobi Wine had won that election.
Alex, according to the president, the only way to eliminate electoral malpractices in Uganda is through the introduction of electronic voting system with biometric data capture to ensure that the election's integrity is not undermined by rigging. What is the position of the NUP about introducing electronic mechanisms to prevent rigging?
The National Unity Platform has not spoken about biometric. We have spoken about digitization of the election. That is what we have spoken about. Having it digitized, allowing accessibility of the internet and the modern world to these elections. If you remember, and if we are to remind the world, General Museveni switched off the internet. So how would results have been tallied at the National Center when we do not have internet? We did not have internet in the whole country. It was switched off to precipitate the rigging of the regime, to precipitate the incumbency remaining in power, not us who are defeating the incumbency. So he is only ashamed that he was beaten in a game where he called the referee, where he determined the playground, where he determined the time, and then he was beaten on his own timetable.
So where does the NUP go from here in terms of engaging the Electoral Commission and perhaps even the president's NRM to ensure the next elections are truly a reflection of what the people want? Because obviously that is what the president says he wants.
My brother, you don't only know the person we are talking about. So there is no way we would even take him for a word. I have told you that in that military operation of 2021, they murdered 54 Ugandans on 1918 November riots. And these were precipitated by the military.
Alex Weiswa is a spokesperson of the Ugandan Main Opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the presidential candidate of the opposition Liberal Party Ghana, is expressing confidence in winning the presidential poll in the coming December 7 general election. This after Kofi Akpaloo officially submitted documents to the Electoral Commission declaring his intention to run for the election. Speaking to the local media shortly after submitting his documents, Akpaloo vowed to defeat candidates from the governing New Patriotic Party, or NPP, and the main opposition National Democratic Congress, NDC. For more about filing his nomination papers with the electoral body, his plans to win the election, and to funding his campaign, I reached presidential aspirant Kofi Akpaloo.
It went very, very well. It was a smooth exercise because this is not the first time we are submitting our nomination form. So we've gone through it multiple times. So we know the in and out of it. So it didn't take us much time and much hassle to submit.
You promised Ghanaians that you're going to defeat the two leading political party candidates and you come up short. What makes it different this time?
Yeah, this time, yeah, we are well prepared. We are well prepared, unlike the other times, other period. This time around, we are more than the well prepared. And we believe that having about 90 days to go, we're going to put in more effort. We're going to work harder. And like I said, we are the only political party with a clear message that we are going to introduce child benefits and then unemployment benefits, and as well as free tertiary education. So at least with this small message here, people are yearning to see that happen to them. So I can tell you that we can do better, and we know the message will also sync very well with the people.
What about those who are skeptical?
You know, what somebody believes, you can't do much. You can't force the person to believe what you think. So you have to keep on hammering on what your vision is. And then also trying to let them understand that the alternative may not have anything to offer, especially the NDC. So we will keep on saying whatever we can, and then let the people understand and buy into it. Definitely they will vote for us. Honestly, I'm confident that this time around the election will be ours. We'll win the election and we'll win massively.
What makes you confident that with these two leading political parties who have dominated Ghana's political landscape since a return to constitutional rule in 1992, that you will be able to wrestle power from these two giants?
The last election, if you look at the last election very carefully, you realize that we had over 70 million registered voters, but it was only less than 30 million that went out to vote. So there was a significant amount of voters that couldn't turn up. The reason might be different why they didn't go out to vote. So this time around, if you are able to give these people a reason why they should divorce MPP and NDC, trust me, things will not be as usual. And NDC and MPP, they've been playing on divide and rule tactics. But Ghanaians are beginning to know their tricks. So it won't be business as usual. Things will change. So let's all put our finger across and see what comes out after this.
What is your key message that you think Ghanaians will embrace and give you the vote of confidence to be their next president?
The message is putting money directly into people's pockets. We are going to introduce child benefits. Every child below 18 years will receive monthly allowance. That's one thing that we are going to do. And those who are unemployed, we're going to give them unemployment benefits and then also job seekers allowance as well as income support. These are some of the new initiatives that we are bringing, and that people feel that this is going to be a big relief to them.
Mr. Akpaloo, you know a lot of economists and a lot of Ghanaians have been talking about that Ghana is heavily indebted. How are you going to pay for all these?
No, the money has never been a problem because Ghana, our currency is CD, and the government is the government who controls the in and outs of the money. How much CDs comes out and how much CD are sent to the central bank. You know, so if the bank, the government determines the quantity, inflow and outflow of the currency. So that won't be a problem if you know what to do. We just use sovereign money to do it.
Kofi Akpaloo is the presidential candidate of the opposition Liberal Party Ghana. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. The leader of the Zambian opposition New Congress Party, or NCP, has announced the group's withdrawal from the biggest opposition coalition, the United Kwacha Alliance, or UKA. It comes after Peter Chanda criticized some of its leaders of divisiveness, treachery, selfishness, and favoritism. The withdrawal announcement, some analysts say, is good news for the governing United Party for National Development, or UPND. They say it shows the opposition lacks what it takes to lead the country, which they add boosts the electoral prospects of incumbent President Hakainde Hichilema and the UPND. For more about his decision to leave the alliance, I reach Peter Chanda in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Yesterday, I made a decision, which is a very painful decision, to withdraw from the United Kwacha Alliance, based on the fact that there are dictatorial tendencies amongst the leaders within the alliance.
You joined as a leader with your party, so why do you say that there's dictatorial tendencies among leadership? Are you not one of them?
I'm among the 16 political parties, and within the 16 political parties that were affiliated to the United Kwacha Alliance, we have the 8 political parties who call themselves the Council of Presidents. Now, the Council of Presidents is comprised of 8 political party presidents, which also includes the former head of state as part of the 8 political parties that we are making the United Kwacha Alliance Council of Presidents. We are divided in 2 sectors. I belong to a sector that was called the Assembly of Presidents. Now, the Council of Presidents, because they were the first one, especially the 7 that met, because they were the ones that brought us together, they claimed superiority and authority over us. As a result, most of the major decisions that have been made, including appointments in various departments that were advocated by the Council of Presidents within the United Kwacha Alliance, they were all appointed by the Council of Presidents.
You are aware of all these problems. Why now?
Why now? I'll be able to tell you that the reason why I decided now is because the dictatorial tendency of trying to dictate as to who we should associate with as members of the United Kwacha Alliance being made by the chairperson, the interim chairperson of the United Kwacha Alliance. Secondly, there are several things that have been happening within the blocks where some of within the same Council of Presidents were allegedly more like insulting and demeaning some of us. And we are not happy with that fact. Where we portray a picture as if we are united from outside, but within us, there is no cooperation or understanding amongst ourselves. I'll be able to tell you the reason why I decided now before it is too late. Because you see, when you are building a house, you better agree. I believe I come from a theological background, and we say two cannot walk together unless they agree. I have several times when matters arise within us, I've called for Assembly of Presidents meeting. You can imagine that the past 8 months that I've been with them, when the Assembly of Presidents was constituted, we've only had one meeting. Several times that I've called to say, can we have an Assembly of Presidents meeting? The first time I called for that was when President Savoy Imboira insulted the major political party where the former head of state comes from, more like indirectly insulting him. I called for an Assembly of Presidents meeting, and the President Sakwiba Skota, who is the chairperson of the United Kwacha Alliance, paid a deaf ear. That's because when a member of an alliance is attacked, then the alliance should be able to stand out and say, no, the position of President Savoy Mboira does not represent the UKA position.
Some people are saying, so you decided to leave the alliance that you initially believed is the best way forward because your ego is bruised. Your critics are saying this is all have to do with your ego.
We cannot be talking about uniting the country when we, as the leaders of the United Kwacha Alliance, we are not united. Basically, that was my point. No egocentric about it.
So where do you go from here?
So we have a Tonse Alliance where several political party leaders are already coming on board. I belong also to the People's Park, which is an organization that was set up in 2011. And all of us are agreeable on one thing, that is a united opposition front that should be able to deliver the Zambian people from the pain and suffering that are going through now.
Peter Chanda is the leader of the Zambian Opposition New Congress Party, or NCP, spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Botswana's former president Ian Khama has made a surprise return to the country after a nearly 3-year self-imposed exile. Khama, who faces criminal charges, fled the southern African country in 2021, saying his life was in danger after a fallout with President Mokgweetsi Masisi. For viewing, Kudisi Dube reports from the Botswana capital, Gaborone.
Khama appeared Friday in a Gaborone court, where his lawyers asked that a warrant of arrest against him be dropped. He faces 14 charges, which include illegal possession of firearms and money laundering. His lawyer, Unota Mark, told reporters outside court the warrant of arrest has been set aside.
They wanted if we brought him back. The warrants have been set aside. He will appear in court. He will be coming. He brought himself.
Khama, who leads a splinter opposition party, the Botswana Patriotic Front, or BPF, has denied the criminal charges and says they are part of persecution by Masisi. Khama handpicked Masisi to succeed him in 2018. BPF Secretary General Lawrence Ogeditse says Khama, who led Botswana between 2008 and 2018, is back to fight the bogus charges.
He went to the magistrate court to try to get the bogus warrant of arrest that was brought on him quashed.
Khama's return comes just weeks before Botswana holds its general election on October 13. Wogetize says the former president will participate in campaigns for his party.
We have been very consistent, and General Khama has also been very consistent to the effect that we are going to cause an upset in these elections, and he is going to be on the ground campaigning for the BPF, as we are going to do all we can to effect regime change in a democratic way in Botswana.
President Masisi has previously said Khama must return to face the law and denied accusations of persecuting his predecessor. Khama will be back in court on September 23. Kondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Janet Otieno is an award-winning gospel recording artist from Kenya. She is on a U.S.-Canada tour, but stopped by our VOA studio in Washington, D.C., and had a conversation with my colleague David Vandy about her tour and what she does when she's not singing.
Hey, hey, every year I do a tour of this America, both United States and Canada. And this time I was doing it in Canada. I've gone to several states, having concerts here and there, and also ministering in church. So I've done a lot of ministration in churches. And yes, and one of the places that I visited that I really loved because I wanted to see my people is actually here, because I haven't seen them for 10 years. And so being here has just made me so happy. I feel a lot of joy.
So what is life like for Janet out there back home?
It has been amazing. And so I would say life has been good, and just as ministry has its own challenges, like just like any other work that all of us are doing out here. It has challenges, but with God it can truly be amazing. I've seen God do wonderful things to me, and I have a testimony, a lot of it actually.
And so out of music, what are you engaging with?
I love giving back to the community, to the society. I love supporting the less fortunate. I love supporting, widows and the orphans. Just I don't do it the way people do it. Like, you know, I have my own orphanage. I identify different orphanages to partner with. That way I'm able to support a lot of children than just having to support the ones that I have, you know what I mean? So I go to different places supporting the children, giving back, and more so I visit the prisons, women prisons. And I do it like every year during Valentine's. I visit the women so much, give them flowers, go do pedicure for them so that they can feel beautiful, because a woman loves when they are beautiful, have their hair done and do the health, you know, like taking them to medical assessment to make sure that they're okay, taking sanitary towels to them and, you know, lotions and such things. We do it, and I take the bouncing castles to the children, because they are children that are born in prisons, and so that they can also feel this different kind of life that other children are feeling out there. So that's what I do annually, but I do visit them like quarterly.
Janet Otieno is an award-winning gospel recording artist from Kenya. She spoke with my colleague David Vandy from here in Washington. And right now it's time for music from African Collection.
Kiev, la presede la Marawi.
Fatigue passe, tu cocoloco. Ah, cocoloco. Oh, yeah. kokoloko. Kokoloko, na patina hotu kokoloko.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer Tiang Wang, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, no matter how good you are to a goat, it will still eat your yam. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa. Patina hot to Coca Loco. Ibe Coca Loco. Kenya, baby, you kill him, Coca Loco.